Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we're wishing you a happy and safe 4th of July as Absolutely. We celebrate the foundation, the founding of our country, the founding documents, our founding fathers, the things that upon which our liberty are based. It is the only country in the world of history that has such a document, and we are greatly blessed as a result. Let's pray the next generation is smart enough to maintain it.
There you go.
There are some signs of weakness and doubt that creep up every now and then.
It does require maintenance. It's not just going to continue on its own. We got to take care of it. So.
Yeah, it was President Reagan, I think, who said that the country is only as secure as the next generation.
And there you go.
That is a constant evolving situation. Anyway, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, or a few minutes after, and this is live radio, unlike many on the weekend, particularly on holidays. We don't pre-record something as though we know what's going to happen, because we don't. We are here impromptu, right along with you. And if you want to be impromptu with us, there's a magic phone number, 888-312-5757. You can pick up the phone, punch in those numbers. Mike will pick up your call, figure out whether or not you want to talk about the stuff we're talking about, which is stock market, finance, investing. If you want to talk about the weather, that's the wrong program. But in any event, we are here to discuss what's going on with the market. And if you've got some new suggestion from your neighborhood financial advisor that you should be making some big change and you want a second opinion, here's a good opportunity to get it. Just call us at 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. However, starting out with not the best news of the week, investors at the present time and present stock market price levels should expect to be, apparently, according to some surveys, severely disappointed in the delivery of their expectations. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that happens often, and I'm never sure why all of a sudden everybody gets so returns blown out of proportion, and people begin to think about the big money that's going to be rolling in. It's going to keep coming in for years, and I don't know where that comes from sometimes.
Well, there's a recent survey of 750 investors. To be statistically significant, you have to poll 950. So I don't know why they stopped short here. But these were 750 investors with at least $100,000 in the market, investable assets. And what was discovered is a classic case of hindsight bias. Now, what's hindsight bias? Well, you look back over your shoulder and say, well, things have been going pretty well lately. I think they'll go pretty well into the future for just a long period of time. And so over the last 5 years, unlike the previous 90, the average stock market return over the very long haul is between 9 and 10%, depending upon your starting point. But more recently, maybe no thanks to the Fed pumping a ton of money into the system, the average return over the last 5 years, about 17.5%. And in the survey, that's exactly what these investors think should happen to their accounts. And there's a little bit of a discrepancy here. When you go poll professional investors who happen to look at probabilities, valuations, activity, the volume, a lot of data in the market, financial professionals think that a little less than 7 would be reasonable. That the difference between 17.5 and less than 7, that's a big spread waiting for disappointment.
They are, and it's really hard to get people to understand that just because something has happened recently doesn't mean it's going to continue for an indefinite period of time. And I think what's going on here, and this was a global survey, it's all over the world. It's not just the United States, but I think there's been so much money made in so many places. Like Bitcoin, meme stocks, that all of a sudden I think there's too many people that think this is really pretty easy. This is not a big deal, and there's no reason that this should not just continue on forever, because that's the way it's been since I've been investing, and you know their investing life has been 3 years, so they have
or less.
They haven't seen the big downturn yet. They haven't seen the market take back. I mean, that happens all the time, but they haven't seen that yet. And until they do, they're not gonna really internalize the fact that hey, there can be a big difference between what's going on right now and what happens just next year or next month for that matter.
So part of that is long-term rates of return are built into most investment models. And if we actually do use hindsight bias ourselves in running portfolios, but we use the last 21 days. We don't use the last 90 years.
Negative.
Because, yeah. But that's what models are based on. And then what we're dealing with this survey is, Perry, as you just said, if you are new to the investment arena and you just started putting money in, if you started putting money in a year ago, it's been nothing but a rocket ship uphill. I mean, it just, because you started at the bottom of a bear market, and that is a timing situation which will not happen to you every year.
And it's going to change radically going forward. So to extrapolate any recent return levels into the future just doesn't make any sense. But it is happening all over. And it seems to be a universal feeling right now that things are great and they're probably going to stay great. And those expectations are probably going to stay there until, you know, the market turns. So until we have the next significant drawdown. And like we always say, we know it's coming. We just don't know when it's coming.
So you want to get a realistic perspective on what's happening in the market, you should join us next Saturday for our first Saturday of the month, which is not a holiday, webinar on Stock Market Update. And you can register for that at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the webpage, you'll see it says webinar. A couple of clicks. Your email, first and last name, and you will be set up to receive an invitation link that will put you in touch with us live right after next weekend's radio program. 15 minutes later, we start the webinar, and whatever reveals itself in the market data this week, the week that's ahead, we are going to try to encapsulate in that, give you some perspective on where things are trending. Now, there is a lot of data that says trends tend to persist. We subscribe to that.
And they do. That's correct. Yeah.
It's academically, that's true. What the academics can't do is they can't put it into a mathematic formula. Therefore, they say it does exist, but we can't explain why. Neither can we. But we do follow those trends. We just don't believe that you should buy and hold through thick and thin.
We believe that trend. You know, the trend is your friend until it's not. So you just have to keep paying attention. It's a lot more work, but you have to keep paying attention to those trends and where they're heading, because they're going to change. They're never consistent. They're never locked in. And believing that they are is a huge mistake. So if you're going to be in the market, you need to be paying attention to what's going on currently. And that's how you can actually add some real safety to your portfolio by avoiding the weakness out there. Don't be there. But the only way to do that is be paying attention all the time.
You know, somebody has to, and we do. You want to talk to us this morning, it's 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. You're a little shy to be on the radio, you can talk to us during the week with absolute privacy at 800-317-9119. One thing that is not debatable, and that's always not debatable in the market, is what's the price. The
Indeed.
Price yeah. is absolute.
It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter where you got it. As long as the information's accurate, everybody's working off the same prices. So the price of anything tells you the truth about where it is currently.
Now, we can argue about whether the price is too high, too low, whether it's over or undervalued. There's lots of things you can argue about, but the price is what it is. And that is the basis of the decisions we make within our portfolios that we manage for individuals and for 401k plans.
We're always telling people, you know, that market out there, regardless of what part of the market you're in, it's an auction. It's an auction market. And the price that gets paid when something is bought and sold, that tells you where it is. That tells you what the value is. That tells you if more people want it or if more people are trying to get rid of it. And like you said, Don, that's the fact. And you can argue about whether you think it's too expensive or too inexpensive. The truth of the matter is that's the decision of the global investing world. That's values the asset. That sets the direction. That's an important thing to track. Price is the top indicator that we look at.
So prices do change, and they change based on an adjustment of market opinions and preferences. The market responds to those. So if the price of lumber rises, which it had until a few weeks ago, it's finally dropped about 50%. It's still expensive, but that creates an impact on housing, which makes an impact on builders. It has an impact on potential buyers. In the short run, consumers try to get ahead of that. They want to buy before the price gets even more expensive. Eventually, they quit buying because they say this doesn't make any sense. And then lack of demand, prices fall. And with lack of demand right now on the phone, we should probably take our break and give them a phone number again.
Ah, supply and demand driven break. I love it. We'll get out of here. If you guys like to remind everyone, we have our next market update on Saturday, July 10th at 9:15. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and give that registration link a click, and you'll get an email back with a link in it. And next Saturday on the 10th, you just click that link after our radio show here, and you'll be live online with us, where we're going to give a market update about what's going on out there in the market, the economy, and then we always have plenty of time for your questions about anything market related, trading related, or if you have questions about individual securities, either something that you own that you're wondering if you should still hold on to, or something you're thinking about adding to your portfolio, it is the perfect time to get a second opinion. You'll see the live charts on that online, let you know what we're thinking about those particular securities. It's a great time to get a reading. Again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. You can talk to us this morning, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive.
Well, that's true in any race, any competition, and it's true in the stock market with companies. Strong companies do survive, and at some point in time, almost everything runs out of energy, and then they get weak, and something else has a new surge of power. Or in the market, it is a new surge of investors who are interested in it. There are many forecasters about talking about the stock market. That is, and we are not in that camp.
Way too many, in fact, yeah.
We do not know what's going to happen next week or even in the years ahead. We assume that we typically know things about the future that we really don't. Friedrich Hayek, who's written some classic economic books, uses the term that people have a pretense of knowledge. Yes, they believe they know what's going to happen. Had that discussion recently with an individual who is very concerned about the future of our country, and legitimately so, in our opinion. Well, speaking for myself, Perry, I assume we're on the same camp.
Absolutely.
There's always something to be worrying about, and in the market, it is, how can this keep on going? And we wonder that ourselves, but we have no idea. What we do believe firmly is that while in the long run, and it may be the very long run, the market goes up because in a free economy, innovators come to the forefront and they develop new ways to do old things in a more efficient manner. And that creates an expanding economy with expanding opportunities for everybody who wants to get off the couch and work. However, we don't always have that kind of vision. So when we take a look at the market, sometimes things get out of kilter. And that may be part of where we are today when we look at how extended prices are relative to actual earnings and sales. One of the big concerns is all the money that was, I'm going to put my fingers up in the air and make quote marks, printed by the Fed. Well, the Fed doesn't really print money. They do make money out of the air. They don't print it. They journal it. And the money goes to the banks. The assumption is this is highly inflationary, and it's going to catch up with us. Well, inflation is a problem, but not for that reason, because inflation is generated by money in motion. And we are a fractional economy. We make money by lending it. Banks have to lend money so that you go out and you borrow it. You go out and buy stuff that you otherwise could not afford. And when they do that with the fractional reserve system, you borrow money, you start by putting it in a bank until you're ready to spend it. That bank only has to put 10% of it in reserve, and they lend it to somebody else, and they say, well, I'm not quite ready to spend it, but I've got a project. They put it in another bank, and that bank only has to hold 10% back. And pretty soon you've expanded the money supply because people are actually borrowing and spending. When the Fed prints money, so to speak, they give it to the banks. And the banks have said, we don't want to lend money. And they've been putting it back on deposit at the Fed to earn, in a lot of cases, 0%. Because they don't want to lose the money. Now they have it. But the money's not in circulation. The Fed printing money is not causing inflation.
And it hasn't. And it has, you know, that drumbeat started back in 2009. As soon as Alan Greenspan started the helicopters and started dumping money on the economy, it was assumed, well, this is just going to cause crazy out of control inflation, and it has to. It's going to happen. That's what's going to occur. Nothing. You know, we've got nothing. Inflation is just as hard to predict as the economy, trying to pick a direction and how sharply it's going to respond to anything, which is why we don't do that. We try to wait and watch. And so right now there's a raging conversation going on about inflation. And is it here to stay for good? Is it just transitory? What's going on out there? And, you know, we listen to it all. We think it's all very interesting, but none of it really matters until it ends up in an inflation number. And then you can make a decision based on that. But until then, that is what you said earlier, Don. That's the pretense of knowledge. We believe we know what's going to happen. Well, you don't. And if you start acting like you know what's going on, that can really lead you to, into some big mistakes. You need to look at the numbers and let the data lead where you're going.
If you want to talk to us this morning, the phone number is still open and live. 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. Well, given current prices, if we take a look at this on a chart, and this isn't TV, so I can't show it to you, but we look at the difference between current prices and an average. And so when we take a look at the monthly average, we find that the 50 monthly average is quite a bit lower than where prices are, and yet it has been a stabilizing factor of risk, identifier of risk, since, oh, say 1982. How about that? That's a pretty long track record, and it's clearly identified when there were extended losses that were right ahead of you, and then the recovery. And when things get spread too far apart or substantially farther apart than you've seen in much of your investing lifetime, you have to raise the question, how long can this last? Mm-hmm. We don't know how long this can last, but the current situation has only occurred a few times over the last 40 years. Once was in late 86, and then again shortly thereafter on Black Monday in 1987. It's 97, the start of the tech bubble, and 98 in the midst of it, and then in 99 at the end of the tech bubble. That's when this kind of price extension above the monthly moving average occurred. And with those five events, they all preceded major market drops. So do you have a strategy for dealing with that, or has your advisor told you, you don't worry about those kinds of things because if the market drops 30%, you know, it's going to come back. They just don't tell you you need to live long enough to wait for it to come back and don't use your money in the meantime. That would destroy the whole plan. We used to subscribe to that, what they call modern portfolio theory, from 1952. Yeah, you remember the Studebaker, right? You know, same vintage. That theory basically assumes that you turn your money over to big institutions whose purpose is to last forever, and they want to keep your money forever. They just don't do anything to keep it from losing value in bear markets.
They don't do anything, and they're not supposed to. That's the way the theory works. You just get that asset allocation set up, and then you forget about it. You don't make changes. You don't react to what's going on in the market. The problem is they're going to tell you that, you know, when stocks are going down, bonds are going to go up, and if stocks are going down, gold's going to head back up, and there's supposed to be this balanced outlook, and everything's going to come out in your favor. The problem is that's not how it works. If we have a significant drawdown, everything goes down together. Some things will go down faster than others, but everything's going to turn into a losing asset during a significant drawdown, and they're not going to do anything at all to protect your capital, and that is the way that process is supposed to work. We're just going to ignore this, and we're going to wait as long as it takes for it to come back. That's our plan. So the only safety is time, long periods of time. There's no safety in the plan, and there never was. That's just become a marketing pitch by the vast majority of financial advisors that use it.
Well, and the bottom line is the reason that the industry uses it is that's how they protect themselves when they get sued. You answered questions about your risk tolerance, and the mathematical theory says that based on those answers, you should have, let's just say, 60% stocks and 40% bonds, and all they did was give you what you asked for.
So if you lost money, it's your fault. It's not our fault. Isn't that handy?
They followed best practices, but best practices are not designed to protect you from the 34, 50% decline in the market. Unless you change your answers to the questions, before the market tanks. If you change them afterwards, it's too late, and then you will miss the recovery. And that's a common mantra. If you go to cash while the market's falling, you'll never get back in. Well, if you're using your emotions, one, to get out, you're right. You'll never get back in because your emotions at the bottom of a market are going to say there's even worse lying ahead. That's where market-generated data is important because it forces the decision to buy low and sell high. And that's the other part of making a successful investment. You have to be willing to sell high to protect your capital so that you'll have cash to buy at lower prices during these major market declines. That's a process. We're going to explain that process next week on our webinar as we update you on current market conditions about the stocks and bonds, international equities. Register for that at IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. When we come back from this break, we'll talk about interest rates and why they are abysmally low.
Very interesting.
When it seems like they should be higher.
Absolutely. We'll get out of here for our bottom of the hour break. If you're not receiving our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, goes out most Mondays, you can sign up to get that. Send us an email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line. We need your first and last name, and that'll get you in the system, and you'll begin receiving that this Monday. It's a nice little roundup of what's gone on out there this week, what's important, and what things you can probably safely just ignore. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometimes. When you take, you gotta give. So live, let live, or let go. Whoa, 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 whoa. I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden. I could promise you things like big diamond rings, but you don't find roses growing on stalks of clover. So you better think it over.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to Investor Resources. Got a couple of gremlins running through the control room right now. Welcome back to the show. We're busily trying to find out where Don went. He's online somewhere, wandering around by himself, missing right now. So we're going to see if we can find him. Is that you, Don?
Yeah. Well, I'm on the back line.
Excellent. No, you're live. You're on the air.
Okay. All right. Here we go again.
Into the ether we go.
So, my internet service has been having difficulty this last week, and every now and then, man, I'm just dropped out.
Well, there you go. Technology is just like trends. They're our friend until they're not. And then
until they're not. That's right. Well, when we went to break, we said we were going to talk about why interest rates aren't going higher. And part of that just happens to be individuals' belief in what should be happening. And apparently the majority of people believe the Fed that inflation is not going to last very long. And I have said over the last couple of weeks, I think they're wrong, but that's my opinion. And as far as its validity and how much stock you should put in it over the next couple of years, not much, because I have no ability to know what's going on. I can see what's happening now. The question, I think one of the real problems that the Fed's facing here is wages.
Mm-hmm.
Wages are rising. People are spending a lot of time on the couch because they're being paid to stay there. And business is trying to get people to come back in and even fill out an application, much less show up for work, are having a hard time. And how do they do? What do they do to give you an incentive? They pay more money. And so one of the other things that we see is people are quitting their jobs because they can go someplace else and get a raise. Well, the guy that just lost the worker has to raise wages to attract people into his place. And once we get through this wage rising cycle, I think it's going to be really hard for businesses to say, it's all over. We're going to cut wages and go back to where we were last year or the year before.
Remember before the pandemic? Well, that's what you're going to start getting paid next week. And that's the part that's probably not going to be transitory in inflation. You know, like you said, Don, earlier, lumber prices are down significantly from the peak. It's anticipated the same thing is going to happen with car prices, things are going to return to normal. But those increased wages are still going to be out there, and it's doubtful that they're going to be able to roll those back. So that becomes a permanent increase in the base cost of running a business, which means that gets passed on to us, the consumers.
So at some point in time, interest rates should rise. But right now, we have an awful lot of money coming into the bond market. In fact, massive amounts of money have actually left stocks to buy bonds at historically low rates. And you say, why would you do that? Well, some of this is just automatic investing programs, target date funds in retirement plans. Or if you have a state-sponsored college funding program and your student is going to go to college, let's say, in 10 years, when you started a savings program, 529 program, 10 years ago, I mean, you were thinking in advance. Yeah, it was good for you, but you put on an automatic program. Well, the closer you get to needing the money, you are automatically invested in more bonds. So you've been walking away from higher returns to buy some of the lowest returns in your lifetime. And you said, that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't, but they're all doing the same thing. It's all modern portfolio theory, all those target date funds, all those robo-advisors, all those automated online investment plans. They're all doing modern portfolio theory portfolios. Essentially, that means they're all cooking out of the same cookbook, and they all need exactly the same ingredients. So right now, as we have an aging population, as the boomers continue to age, they're all buying bonds. And no one's out there saying we should be doing it. It's just the algorithm saying, well, you just got another year older. We're going to add some more bonds to your portfolio. And they just keep buying them. So if you're issuing bonds and people at extraordinarily low rates and you're still selling them all, why would you raise rates? Keep them low. And that's what's going on right now. That's part of it. And the automatic buying because of modern portfolio theory is just a fascinating feature of what's going on. It's completely automated. It's completely based on age. And the boomers are still, you know, retiring at $10,000 a month. And so all of those people keep getting their portfolios, keep accumulating more and more bonds, thinking it's getting safer. Which, of course, it's not, but that's not part of the theory. The theory is you own more bonds, and that's what they're doing.
And so why aren't bonds safe? Well, bonds are safe if interest rates continue to decline. So what makes bonds safe in the models is an assumed rate of return over time of 5.5%. So whether you like it or not, you're buying these bonds at 1.5 or 2, or you can buy the really high risk bonds, junk bonds, at a little less than 4. Now, the problem is that people don't understand that when interest rates rise, bonds lose value. Rising interest rates sound good because you can go to the bank and actually get something for money on deposit, but rising rates destroy the value of your bonds. And the only way you can get your money back in whole is wait for the bonds to mature. And that may be 10, 15, 20 years away before those bonds actually mature and they give you back your original purchase price. Unless, of course, you own a mutual fund or an ETF that's in bonds and they don't mature. So you just simply have market risk in them. sounds like we don't believe in bonds, which is not true.
No.
We believe bonds make sense when bonds make sense. If bonds are actually generating positive returns in your portfolio, which they have been intermittently, they should be in the portfolio. In fact, we have some exposure to bonds in our portfolios this month.
Just added them, yep.
Do we not like them? Well, we're skeptical, but what bonds making money in this market mean is risk really is rising and people are beginning to become concerned about the risk in stocks. Well, our portfolios automatically adjust to that because bonds come up to the top of the list or cash comes up to the top of the list. And if cash is at the top of the list, we don't buy anything that is ranked lower than cash. If it's losing money, we don't want it in our client portfolios. And when things turn around and cash is falling down the list because other investment options are rising, generating positive returns, those leaders are the ones that should be in the portfolio. That's dynamic response to market generated data.
And that's what we always do. We don't have a belief that bonds are good or bad or equities are good or bad or commodities are good or bad. It's how are they doing now? And if they bubble to the top of the list because they're attracting money and they're doing well now, we want them in the portfolio. And if the opposite is true, if they're doing poorly, we don't care how well they did do over the previous 10 years or whatever time frame you're looking at. It doesn't matter how well they have been doing. How are they doing now? That's the key, because things change rapidly and the changes are getting larger and larger, and things that were very, very much in favor all of a sudden are completely out of favor. You don't want to own them anymore. And you have to adapt to that. Like I said, Don, you have to be dynamic in your approach to what gets into your portfolio and, more importantly, what you decide to take out. That's the key.
That's right, and that requires constant monitoring. Sitting back on in your easy chair and assuming that everything is going to be okay, if you just keep your eyes closed and you wait long enough, and maybe they will turn out. But what happens if you need the money and it is a repeat of the 2001 to 2003 market cycle, where the S&P is down 54% and the NASDAQ's down 90, and you now need your money, and you wake up from your Rumpelstiltskin sleep and say, it's time to retire, and where's my money?
What happened? And that's kind of that is the worst case scenario, but it just happened at the beginning of the 2000s. And so we're not surprised when it happens. We know it can happen anytime, and it doesn't necessarily have to have some massive event for that to occur. Markets move, markets change, and when they do, you have to change with them. And if you don't, they can just roll right over you. And, like we always say in our open, the market doesn't care. The market does not care how badly you need your money. The market does not care when you need your money. The market does what it does. So we have to adapt the portfolios to make sure people maintain their liquidity. Protect the capital. That is such an important thing, and that's just not part of that pie chart, not part of a modern portfolio theory at all. We're at our last break here, Don. Let's go ahead and get out of here for our final break of the morning. Still have plenty of time to get your call on the board. If you'd like to give us a call at 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. And another reminder, next Saturday, July 10th, 9:15, we'll have our July stock market update. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to Investor Resources.
Well, that's make it go higher, and that's what everybody wants to happen with the stock market. Assuming you're in the market, and it's part of one of the reasons you're likely listening to us, there's a 70% probability. Here we go again with the odds maker. There's a 70% probability that you're underperforming the market. But the reality is, most people don't target the S&P 500 as their benchmark because they answer these questions about risk management. And I have yet to meet anybody who says, I just want the S&P 500, and I don't care if it's down 30 or 40 or 50%, as long as I'm getting stock market returns. And if the market's down for a year and a half and you're down 40%, well, you get stock market returns. All you have to do is buy the S&P 500.
It's real simple.
But it's real simple. You don't need to hire an advisor. I mean, you just buy Vanguard almost every major sponsor of mutual funds and ETFs has an S&P 500 fund. And they're cheap because nobody's doing anything. They're just sitting there owning stocks for the long haul. But the recent last several years worth of S&P performance has been driven by just a handful of stocks. Mm-hmm. And unless those are the stocks that you own and you don't own anything else, it's really difficult to outperform the market. The stock index has really been skewed a lot of that by automated investing, high frequency traders. Dark pools aren't really the problem because they don't bid up prices. But meme stocks do. Retail investors do. They get excited because they see something that looks really easy. And one of those things that looked really easy this last year was GameStop on Robinhood phone app.
It got widely used. There were so many people on Robinhood, so many people together buying GameStop that they just changed the nature of the way that worked. They changed the nature of the way the market works. There was no connection to reality, no connection to anything to do with the company. It was everybody getting together and saying, "Yep, we're all going to buy it because we're all going to buy it," and it went up dramatically, of course.
Well, and then they actually did manage to squeeze out some of the big institutions that were betting on GameStop going bankrupt. So some hedge funds really lost a lot of money, but then they reversed their positions, and a lot of the late to the GameStop game, individual investors lost a lot of money as the big guys drove it back down. I mean, it's... share and share alike,
which was inevitable. Yeah, it had to happen, right? And it did. But in the meantime, that really has put a new kind of set of a power class of investors together that didn't exist before because they couldn't all move together in unison, and now they can all get together online, get on social media, and everybody run to their phone Robinhood or a number of other online trading platforms, and they all move together, and that makes it much more powerful than if anybody was trying to do that individually.
But that game may be coming to an end because Robinhood had to pay millions of dollars in fines for bad execution of all those free trades. Those free trades were overpriced more than what if they had been buying it at a different broker-dealer than they would likely have paid. So there's a comeuppance there.
And by the way, that was not the first time Robinhood's been fined either. They know the process, let's say that. They paid before. So when they got this fined, they knew where to send the money. So
yeah, that's true. But it's such a big deal now that Robinhood wants you to buy their stock. Now, they're not making any money yet, but they want you to buy their stock. And this is the first time that an app like this is being allowed to actually participate in an IPO, and particularly its own IPO.
Its own IPO. So like they said, Robinhood wants you to buy Robinhood on Robinhood. So that's their plan.
So we can make some money selling our own stuff. You just come here and we'll sell it to you. I mean, that's the way the game's going to work. But it is, for the most part, those are inexperienced investors who have little background in figuring out whether or not a company is actually liable to survive. I can almost guarantee that the Robinhood investor is not showing up at the monthly meetings of the American Association of Independent Investors, AAII.
They are not, and Robinhood thinks that that's not fair, that there should be more individual investors involved with IPOs. The bulk of that usually goes to, you know, the banking organizations that are bringing the company public, and then their best clients get the shot at the IPO, and pretty much nobody else does. So when Robinhood goes public, they're targeting 30% of their shares going to individual investors, and they want that to become a trend. Is that a good thing? I'm not sure. We'll see. We're not big on IPOs. We don't think buying an IPO at issue is necessarily a good idea. Give it a minute. See if the company's going to stay around or not, and then you can decide whether to get in or not. But making a big killing on an IPO is not very common.
Well, my rule of thumb is you wait 6 months, because usually within the first 6 months, the shares of the original buyers and owners who have almost no cost per share, their lockup period goes away. And so in that first 6 months, the excitement that drives the price up, the founders and the original special people that put money up in the beginning, they start unloading. And they don't care if it drops 25% off its high, because they still only have a buck or two per share cost. So there's a lot of selling that can occur in that first 6 months, and then things are start to deal with reality.
The company's going to sink or swim on merit, and then you can find out whether it's something worth pursuing or not. Go ahead.
Yeah, in this last segment, I was talking about bonds and the average return being 5.5%. And this last article, Perry, that you picked up for us this week, I just realized I made a huge mistake. I was wrong. The average return on bonds over the last 45 years of the Bloomberg Aggregate Bond Index is 7.3%. So when you look at the way most people's portfolios are structured to increase their bond allocation as they get older, the model is using 7%.
Correct.
In today's market.
Yeah.
Which
doesn't exist, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't even get 7% in a firm that's on the verge of bankruptcy.
Right.
And yet we're going to make 7% with your bonds. That's why we have bonds, because we just look at the model, and that's what it's averaged over time. That's not rational. You're building in an inevitable drop, significant bear market in your safety valve. Now, maybe interest rates will continue to fall 90% over the next 30 years, and this number will repeat itself. But ask yourself, do you believe interest rates will fall another 90% over the next 30 years, and your bonds are going to be profitable like they have been the last 30 or 35, well, in this case, 45 years? Good luck with that.
Yep.
I haven't found anybody who says, oh, yeah, that's going to happen. Interest rates are going to drop from 1.25 to 0. Yeah, that's going to be good for me. That's what I'm counting on. No, that hasn't happened. Nobody's told me that.
We haven't found anybody that believes that's going to happen. But your portfolio is still built that way because they're constantly, you know, driving forward, looking in the rearview mirror, saying, "Well, over the past 50 years, here's what's happened." And it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happened over the past 50 years. We're not living there. We're not investing there, and we can't get the returns that were there. We have to look at where we are now and where we think things are moving forward, and react to those. And there's nothing else you can do. Looking back and projecting that going forward is just a really dangerous thing to do.
And that doesn't factor in inflation. I mean, factor in inflation. You go back to the inflationary period from 1950 to 81, and inflation wasn't high during all that time. A lot of it, inflation was below 2, but then the 70s accelerated. And that, anyway, with inflation, bonds actually lost 50% of their value. So that 7% long-term rate of return wasn't worth quite as much. And that's a mental factor that people have a hard time grasping.
Sure, and you can bet that wasn't part of anyone's plan. That wasn't part of anybody using modern portfolio theory. That wasn't any part of what was going to occur in their portfolio. That is not accounted for, and it can happen. And when it does, they don't make an adjustment for it. That's the reason it's dangerous. They don't change, no matter what's going on. So you know, there you've got 30 years, 50% down, and we're just going to write it down. That's not healthy.
So register for next week's, right after the show, the next week's stock market update. Go to irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Lower left-hand corner of the website, a couple of clicks, your name and email, and you'll be set up to join us next week. We are out of time here. Have a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. Oh, I just got 30 seconds to give you the information on how to register for our webinar. Go to irradio.com, irradio.com, lower left-hand corner of the website. Register for next week's stock market update. We're going to cover whatever information gets revealed to us over the course of the next several days. Call us during the week at 800-317-9119. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Have a great weekend.